So let's just, we'll backtrack for a second to get our minds back into the month of Tevis, and then we'll talk about another point tonight. Past few weeks we've discussed how the month of Tevis is a month of tragedy. It's the beginning of the Churban, of the destruction. It's when the Beis HaMikdash, the destruction, first began in Tevis with the siege on Yerushalayim. It's a month associated with Esav, anti-Semitism, exile. So it's a month of all sorts of bad events. That's Tevis. Last week we discussed how the mazel of Tevis is the Gedi, is the goat, which symbolizes Esav, and how it's a month which happens to be where the non-Jewish world celebrates New Year's on the solar calendar, where they have, you know, the Christian world has the birth of their religion during this month. And it's a month that a lot of difficulties have risen up for the Jewish people. So we have to figure out, when you're in a tragic month like this, and you're experiencing anti-Semitism and tragedy, how does one deal with struggles? And I think one of the key answers to this is to understand the Shevet of the month. The Shevet of this month, we said every month corresponds to a certain Shevet. So the Shevet of this month is Shevet Dan. Shevet Dan is a very fascinating Shevet. Of all the tribes, you know, Shevet Dan, I think, is maybe one of the most mysterious of them all. If you go through different sources about what Dan symbolizes, what they did, you have a lot of, you know, contradictions in terms of who they were. So let's understand a little about Shevet Dan, and it'll help us understand how to approach the month of Tevis. And it'll teach us what is our job, what's our mission this month. So just to go through some sources about Shevet Dan. I mean, Dan was the son of Bilha, who was the maidservant of Rachel. So one of the children of the maidservants of Yaakov. Dan's one of the 12 tribes. He gets a bracha from Yaakov and from Moshe. He has a portion of Eretz Yisrael. He heads one of the camps. You know, in the Midbar, when the Jews were traveling, they had four camps. Machane Reuven, Machane Ephraim, Machane Yehuda, Machane Dan. So Dan got to head a whole camp. So he's somebody who seems to be very chashuv, very important on the top of Klal Yisrael. He has a lot of significance to him. In the bracha given to him in last week's parsha by Yaakov Avinu, it says, Ke'achad Shivtei Yisrael, that Dan is somebody who is like the choice of the tribes. Ke'achad Shivtei Yisrael, he's like one of the tribes, one of the best of the tribes. We find he's compared to a lion. In the bracha of Moshe Rabbeinu, a lion is very considered the king of the animals. A lion is considered a very noble animal. Yehuda is compared to a lion. Yehuda is the tribe of kingship. They're compared to lions. So Dan has a lot of noble aspects about him. Additionally, when we built the Mishkan, there are two people selected to build the Mishkan. You had Betzalel, who was from the tribe of Yehuda. And then you had Aholiyah, who was from the tribe of Dan. So the two tribes involved in building the Mishkan were Yehuda and Dan. Yehuda is looked at as the top of the tribes, and Dan was involved as well. So too in the Beis HaMikdash. When Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash, you had Shlomo HaMelech, who was from Yehuda. Then you had Chiram, who was from Dan, who assisted in building the Beis HaMikdash. So on the one hand, you look at Dan, you'd say, wow, they're one of the greatest of all the different Shvatim. One of the most significant, the most chashuv. But yet, you look at some other sources, and Dan is very troubling. It says in last week's parsha, Dan's compared to a snake. We all know what a snake means in Jewish thought. You know, going back to Gan Eden, and from that point onwards, the snakes was a symbol of evil, a symbol of the Yetzer Hara, a symbol of that which is wicked in the world. We know that Dan was the source of idolatry in Eretz Yisrael. The idols that were worshipped in the northern kingdom were all worshipped in Dan's territory. We know that Micha, who was one of the descendants of Dan, he even carried an idol through the Yamsuf. When the Jews crossed the sea, he carried an idol over the sea, after the Makos, after leaving Mitzrayim. We can't imagine something more extreme than that. You know, he was worshipping idols in the midst of all the great miracles of Hashem. It says that Dan was expelled from the Aron HaKavod, the clouds of glory. You know, Dan was a tribe because of the idolatry they had within. In the desert itself, they were thrown out of the clouds. That's a pretty serious thing. That's a pretty extreme thing. So you find a lot about Shevet Dan that sounds very, very negative. You compare them to a snake, they're thrown out of the clouds, they're a source of idolatry. Another interesting fact is that I always think it's fascinating to understand, excuse me, if you look at how the Jews camped in the desert. So we discussed a few weeks back, the concept of these camps all circled around the Mishkan. But every single tribe had their location. And who is in north, who is in the south, who is east, who is west makes a big difference. Every direction has a certain symbolism and significance in Jewish thought. So Dan was situated in the north, on the Tzafon. Both in Eretz Yisrael, they had their portion of land in the north. They were the most northern tribe. And in the Midbar, you know, their camp was in the north. So what does north symbolize? The idea of north, Tzafon, always associates with Ra, with evil. The Pasuk says, Mitzafon tipasach ha-Ra, that from the north, the evil will begin. Babylonia is situated kind of northeast-ish of Eretz Yisrael, and that's where evil began. That's where the first destruction of speech began, in Babylonia and Babel. And the concept of the north in general, the reason it's considered evil, the north, ancient maps were always positioned that east was on the top, right towards the sun. That's why, like in Lashon HaKodesh, you find the Kedem, you know, forward is east, right? That's Kedem, it's forward is east, because east is always the top of ancient. Look at any ancient map, both Jewish and non-Jewish, east is always on the top. So if east is on the top, that means that north is on the left. Left always symbolizes that which is evil in Jewish thought. The concept of left, I mean, a typical person is right-handed, so left is a weaker hand. Even in halacha, it's interesting, somebody who's a lefty in halacha, it's called their right hand. So the left always means their weaker hand, that's what it means. But for most people in the world who are righties, the left is their weaker hand. So left is considered weaker. The term smol, which means left, associates with the angel of Esav, Samael, smol, and it goes together. So north is always considered something which is associated with evil on the Torah map. And the reason, another reason for this is because we're looking in the northern hemisphere. So in the northern hemisphere, the further north you go, the farther you are from the equator, which means that you're away from the sunlight. And we've discussed how the sun is a symbol of Hashem. And the light's a symbol of clarity, and the light's a symbol of understanding. So as you go further north, you're further away from where the sun is shining. That's considered, again, we can discuss darkness, the world of darkness, the world where it's colder and darker. So that's considered a realm of evil, a realm of something which is not clear, concealment, and that's the north. So Dan is in the north. So Dan has this challenge of being a tribe which Hashem has deemed should go in the north, which is an area of evil and darkness and destruction and coldness. That's Shevet Dan. We discussed how Tevis is the coldest of months, and Dan is in the coldest sections of Eretz Yisrael, being all the way far north. That's what Shevet Dan is. It says that Avram Avinu, when he was fighting the war of the four kings and the five kings, so Avram stepped into the war in order to save his nephew Lot. And the Torah records that Avraham pursued his enemies ad Dan, until Dan. So at that point, Dan didn't exist. This is before Dan was born. But this was foreshadowing the future. And in the future, we knew that Dan would be in that area. So the Torah already records this as Dan's region, even in Avram's time. And Rashi tells us, why did he stop pursuing them when he got to Dan's region? Because when Avraham saw into the future that Dan would be so idolatrous, at that point, Avraham lost his strength. You know, it sapped his strength from him because he saw his great-great-grandchildren being idolaters. And therefore, he couldn't pursue his enemies anymore. That's what Rashi tells us. So on the one hand, Dan's considered a very, very significant tribe. They built the Mishkan. You know, they're called Achad Shefei Yisrael, the choice of all the tribes. On the other hand, Dan is considered the lowest of the tribes, idolatrous in the cold, dark north, expelled from the clouds. So how do you understand the role of Shevet Dan? It's very strange. You know, it's such different aspects of this tribe. It goes to the extent that when Yaakov, you know, last week's parsha was describing Shevet Dan, he actually thought the Mashiach had come from Dan. He had seen into the future Shimshon. The hero of Dan was Shimshon. And he said, Shimshon could be Mashiach. That's how great Shimshon was. And then, when he saw Shimshon being killed by the Plishtim, by the Philistines, at that point he said, he can't be the Mashiach anymore. But it turns out that Shimshon, like, he was on the level, he could be Mashiach. So Dan was a tribe that could produce Mashiach even. And that's astounding, because an idolatrous tribe that's producing a Mashiach, like, you wouldn't think so. So where's this all coming from? So we have to understand the role of Shevet Dan. And to put it more into our perspective from last week, we said the month of Tevis corresponds to Esav. Dan being labeled a Nachash, in Yaakov's bracha he's called a Nachash, a snake. So Esav, we know, associates with the snake. You know, the original snake, which enticed Adam and Chava to sin, associates with Esav. We have sources for that. We know that there's the idea that Amalek, the Zohar, compares to a snake. Amalek descends from Esav. Haman, we find that there's a reference to Haman in the snake as well, who also descends from Esav. So Esav's compared to a snake, Dan's compared to a snake. So again, we find that Dan associates Esav, he's evil, he's idolatrous, but yet he's so important that he can be Mashiach. But there's so much about Dan, we have to figure out how do we deal with this mess, and how do we put this all together and make sense of it. So I want to discuss a little Indian the idea of what Dan's all about, and then we can understand more how it associates with this month, and what's the lesson for us. So let's go back for a second. We know that Yaakov and Esav, we mentioned last week, you know, they're twins, and they oppose one another. You know, they were born as twins, they're kind of equal and opposite forces. You know, Yaakov is the force towards good, it's the force towards evil, and the two of them are always going to have to clash in some way, and Yaakov at the end is going to be victorious. So you have the snake called Esav, and that's the snake of evil and the snake of impurity, but you have to have an equal and opposite force in order to counter that. So the tribe that's supposed to be this force to counter Esav coming out of Yaakov is going to be Dan, who associates with Esav. He can be the same snake as Esav. He can be involved in the same terrible acts as Esav. But yet he's the one with the role that he's supposed to be able to fight Esav most effectively. And the question is, you know, you even find that who killed Esav? Anyone who killed Esav? He was killed by Dan's son, Hushim ben Dan. Right? Dan's son killed Esav. So somebody of Shevet Dan is the one who actually killed Esav. So Dan is a force which is supposed to really stand up against Esav in the most powerful way, but not because he has nothing to do with Esav, because he could associate, he can relate. And because he can relate, he can take him down. That's what we understand in the tribe of Dan. So I want to discuss the idea of what they stand for, and then hopefully we can put this all together. We know that, you know, the world has evil. There are challenges in life. We have to deal with evil, with wicked people, with difficult situations, struggles within. In life, there's a lot of challenges that we have to deal with. This really all dates back to the original sin of Adam and Chava in Gan Eden with the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra. When they ate from the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra, at that point, evil entered into the person. And before that point, there wasn't a struggle with evil. There was evil, and there was me, and everything was very clear, you know, what I had to do in order to overcome the evil. Once they ate from the original sin, the tree of the Eitz Hadas, so at that point, it becomes very, very fuzzy. What's good? What's evil? If I encounter evil, how do I deal with it? We really have to stand at guard very, very carefully in order to be able to see what is evil, what is bad, what is false, and then somehow grapple with it. That's our job in this world that we're in. So the question is, how do you grapple with evil? What do you do? You know, and this idea I'm going to share with you, Rabbi Lipiansky has said many times this concept, that there's three ways to grapple with evil. So one way to grapple with evil is you just destroy it. You squash it, you fight against it, you cut it out, and it's gone. I'll give some examples later on so we can understand a little better about that. Some people can just avoid it totally. You know, some people just don't have a certain struggle. Let's say there's somebody, one person can have a terrible struggle with anger, the terrible temper. One person just never gets angry, this never was a challenge for them. So the person with the temper can fight it and tear it out of their system with a lot of hard work and effort. But the person never struggled just doesn't have to worry about it, because they never had that struggle. So one way to fight evil is to actually take it head on, fight it, and destroy it. Some people don't, I guess the example number two is some people don't have to deal with it at all. There's certain things some people never have to get involved in. It was never a challenge for them. But the third way, which really is the ideal thing to do with evil, is to take the evil and find the good within. Now, there's different ways to find the good within evil. One way could be that, you know, you see the struggle and you grow from your struggle. So the struggle was beneficial to us because the struggle helped us grow. Or you can see the evil and you can find how to channel that evil to the good. So let's take an example of somebody who has a terrible temper, but there's sometimes in life where anger is called for. It depends what those times are, but sometimes anger is called for. Sometimes when someone does something which is really wicked, really terrible, then lashing out at them is appropriate. They have to know what they did is totally wrong. So to lash out in everyday life in situations which are very minor, that's bad. But to be able to take that mita within, the mita of kas, the anger a person has, and channel it the right way, that's a good thing. And sometimes being able to perceive evil helps us have a clear definition of good. If you could take a person, that's a wicked person, then you can say, well, therefore, those traits are wicked, and then I can understand what it means to be a good person. So there are ways you can look at evil and actually draw good out of it. That's the third approach. So you actually find these approaches in Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Avraham, is the famous story of Avraham is that when he was a kid, his father had the idol store, and he went and smashed all the idols. That's one of the most famous stories we have of Avraham Avinu. So what does that symbolize to us? It means Avraham saw the evil, and he took out his sledgehammer and just destroyed it all. He wasn't looking for good in the evil, but he had to deal with it. It was in his face. It was in his own home. It was his father's store. He had to deal with the evil, but so his job was to take the evil and destroy it. And that works sometimes. Yitzchak Avinu was somebody who was known that he didn't really have to grapple with evil at all. Yitzchak's life, he was considered an Olo Tamima. He was like a holy sacrifice, especially after the Akedah. He never left Eretz Yisrael. He was born into the family of Avram Avinu, no idols around him. And he was somebody who had very little evil to grapple with. So he was this category number two, which means that I can avoid it all. It's not an issue for me. And that was Yitzhak Avinu. Yaakov is somebody who's plunged into a world of evil. Yaakov has to deal with his brother, who's wicked. He has to deal with his deceptive, cheating uncle. He has to deal with his daughter being kidnapped. He has to deal with his son being kidnapped and sold as a slave. He has to deal with lots of things in life that are very, very difficult. And he complains about it. He actually tells Paro, my years were few and they were difficult. He says it. And he tells us his life, he had a very hard life. But Yaakov's one whose job is to take the highest level, which is to take the experience which he had and figure out what's the good in these experiences. How can I incorporate these struggles and these difficulties into the world of good? He's able to see his life and bring those experiences into the world of Tov. Now there's a very interesting description of the Gemara. The Gemara says that the Jews were sent into exile only to go and collect converts. We're supposed to know that the fact that we're in different countries means that we'll find those Jewish souls out there that didn't yet join the Jewish people, and they'll join us. So the Gemara obviously is saying something much deeper than that. It's saying that sometimes being in Golus, being in exile, we have to deal with struggles and challenges of being a Jew in foreign countries. It means that when you're in those countries, you can kind of pull out from those countries sparks of holiness, sparks of good, sparks of purity. So these souls we're attracted doesn't necessarily mean people, but it means there's different things you pick up in every country that you're in. We'll discuss this more later. But Yaakov is somebody who's forced to go into all these situations, but his job is not just to destroy and kill the evil. His job is to figure out, in these situations, how can I pull out the good? Now there's an amazing gematria, which I find to be just such an important lesson. And I always say gematrias themselves don't stand alone. But if you understand the lesson, then the gematria itself is very impressive. So the Yaakov was renamed Yisrael. When was he renamed Yisrael? So Yaakov had to struggle with Esav. He fought Esav's angel. He defeated Esav's angel. Then he's named Yisrael. You know that Esav and the Satan, they relate. These are the forces of evil in the world. They try to bring out evil in the world. So the gematria of Yaakov plus Satan equals Yisrael. That's what happened. Once he won that battle, he became Yisrael. But what does that mean? It means he incorporated the evil of Esav into himself in a good way, and then he became Yisrael. That's what he became. So you do your math. Yaakov is 182, and Satan is 359. That makes 541. Yisrael is 541. So Yaakov could take all those difficult, evil experiences and challenges he had. He could make it part of himself and incorporate the good of those challenges into his own personality. And then he becomes Yisrael, which is his noble name. Yisrael is the name of him as the leader of the Jews and as the one who's able to overcome all the evil out there. That's Yaakov and Yisrael. So you have three different levels here. You have the level of striking down the evil, you have the level of not having to deal with the evil, and the level of taking the good from the evil. The highest level is this third level, because Hashem doesn't want us to be destructive people. Hashem wants us to be able to see the good in everything. So Hashem wants that of us. Hashem is one. So even the difficult experiences that we have to undergo, that's also Hashem. Hashem is putting us through those experiences. Why is He doing that? It's for a reason. It's for the good. Then we make a bracha when something, God forbid, happens to us, which is very, very difficult. There's a bracha, Dayana Emes. Because that's recognizing that even the worst things in life are also from Hashem. And they're for our own good. That's what they're for. We don't always know why. But our job is to take those experiences and understand that even that's Hashem as well. We don't see anything happens outside of Hashem. Everything is from Hashem. So therefore, you go through that situation and you figure out, well, what's the good which I'm supposed to gain? Why did Hashem do this to me? What's the good I'm supposed to gain from this? So that's the concept of Yaakov. That's the concept of trying to take the good from the evil. And let's just give some examples for a second. So we talked about someone with a bad temper. So that was one example. So either you can totally tear the temper out of your system, which is it's a very difficult thing. It could be a lifelong avoda. But what that means is that the person will end up being, they'll never get angry. They'll say, I'm never going to get angry again. And let's say it actually works. Let's say they actually succeed in this. But let's say time happens, they're supposed to get angry. Let's say that the person's a teacher and the kids are like way out of line. And they say, it's fine, no problem. That's not good. You're not teaching the kids the lesson they need to know. Or a parent, and the kids are way out of line. Sometimes anger needs to be displayed. So totally destroying the evil at times could be counterproductive, because sometimes you need that trait. The trait was used for evil because it's for good. Some people just don't have the challenge of anger. They never had a temper, never will have a temper, and there's easygoing people. But the third group, which is the one which is the ideal, is to be able to take what it means, but take that temper and channel it towards good purposes. So to be able to use it at the times where it's needed, that's very positive. You've taken, Hashem gave you a mita, which is a difficult mita, a challenge that you have, but if to take that and be able to channel it towards the good, that's the ideal. Let's take another example. Let's say somebody struggles with overeating, right? With their weight, with their health. So one person will just totally eradicate from their diet, you know, all carbs and all sugar and all fat, and they'll live a life on lettuce and celery. So people do that. So is that good? I mean, it takes away all those unhealthy foods, but you know, the person may, that's also not good for your health. You know, you need to have protein, you need to have some carbs. It's important to have some things, and you know, sugar is necessary also in our system. Totally eradicate every single food, and also it's a difficult lifestyle because then you go to a party and there's all this cake around. You have to deprive yourself of it. That's also difficult. Some people don't struggle with food. Some people just, you know, they can eat healthy and they can moderate their intake, and it's fine. They don't have a struggle. That's the second level. But the ideal would be to be able to learn how to control the urges, you know, eat the food in moderation. Someone can say, you know, I'll only eat cake on Shabbos, or I'll incentivize myself, I'll give myself ice cream when I do X, Y, or Z. And you can use your appetite for food in a positive way. That'd be the third level. You have examples. Let's say somebody who is about tshuva, and the person, let's say there was a woman who, you know, her career was a singer in nightclubs. So obviously, once you become frum, that's a difficult career to maintain. So you could say, I'm never going to sing again. But again, you have a talent Hashem gave you, and it's a good talent. Or you can say, I'm going to learn how to take my talent and use it for the good. I'm going to sing in women's performances. I'm going to go cheer up people in the hospital by singing them a song. I'm going to be a preschool teacher and sing the kids beautiful songs about Shabbos and Yom Tov. You can use that talent for good things. That's the ideal. That's how we're supposed to use these things, which could be struggles, could be used in such positive ways that we figure out how to do it. And when you go through a difficult challenge or a difficult situation, to be able to see, you know, it's a time of growth, and I can grow from it. You know, let's say the person who's dealing with food. So they can say, I've now grown in my willpower. I now have new self-control because I went through the struggle. If Hashem created me that I never had an appetite to eat all this food, so I wouldn't be able to develop this willpower that I've developed. And now that I've struggled with it and overcome, I have the willpower to overcome other struggles too, and there's positive that comes out of it. So to uplift the evil or the challenges or the struggles and bring out the good, we have to be a part of it. And this is where Don comes in. The person who never associated with evil, they can't grow from it and they can't pull out the good from it. So sometimes we say, I wish I never had the challenge, which, you know, obviously we don't want to ask for challenges. We don't want to ask for difficulties. We want to ask for struggles. But if you never, ever had any association with the struggle, with the difficulty, with the wicked person, with the bad mita, with the situation, so it's very, you can't grow from the situation. And let me give you another oversimplified example, but it just kind of illustrates the point. Let's say you have somebody involved in Kiruv on a college campus. So there's Jews there who don't keep Shabbos, don't keep mitzvot, so very unaware and ignorant of their faith. So if you say, well, I don't want to walk into that college campus, I don't agree what's happening there, I don't like the environment, well then how are you ever going to reach out to those Jews? You have to have somebody, the best people involved in these jobs, the people who can relate to the kids on their level, but yet show them that I could teach you about Torah and I can improve your life. They're teaching you about how you can become a better Jew, a better person, you can learn, you can become holy, you can become greater. But if you're not willing to step foot into their world, and to relate to them on their level, then how are you ever going to bring out the good from these people? Because you're never going to associate. You have to, somebody sitting in their own, you know, someone sits up in their ivory tower and wants everyone to be influenced by them. It doesn't really work, because if you don't associate with people, how are you going to change them? So that's all part of this idea of being able to associate with the evil and then overcome it and pull the good out of it. That's what it's all about. Now, just to clarify, there is a way. There's a very famous comment of Or HaChaim in the Torah. He says that in the ideal world, what would happen was the Jews would be perfect, living in Eretz Yisrael, and we'd be like a magnet to all the non-Jews. They'd all just want to come and see us and improve just by seeing us up in our pedestal. So there's a mahalach like that. It's possible to do that. That's on a very high level. That means that every single Jew is living in a perfect, holy, pure lifestyle in Eretz Yisrael, and then just the Kedusha will just emanate throughout the world, and everyone will like rush to us like a magnet. So there is a way to do that, so without associating. But that's not our world that we're in right now. And that's not the way we live our lives. No, we're not perfect, and we don't have that pedestal to sit in where everyone will just be drawn to magnetically. So we have to associate at times with situations that are difficult or which are struggles. Hashem puts into galus, like we said before. When it says that we're put into galus in only order to attract these souls out there to become Jews, it means that there's so many positives that we're supposed to pick up when we're living in the world that we're in. The fact that Hashem had us born into this time of history, you know, in a time of galus, in a time where there are forces out there that are not positive influences on Jews, was for a reason, because we're supposed to be able to gain from it. So the tribe of Dan, they're a Shevet, which they're one of the Shiftei Ka, they're one of the children of Yaakov. They're supposed to be upheld as one of the holy tribes. But yet, they have inborn tendencies that are difficult. They're drawn to idolatry, they're compared to a snake, they're compared to Esav, they're put into the north. Hashem says, you're going in the north. The area which is considered the darkest and coldest and most evil area, you're stuck there. That's your job, that's your role, that's where you're going to be. Both in the desert and in Eretz Yisrael, they're stuck in the north. Shevet Dan. And the tendencies that were very similar to Esav, you know, Dan is a word of din, of strict judgment. They're idolatrous. But that's how Hashem made them. And their job was to show that you, Shevet Dan, you are people who do associate with all the struggles, all the difficulties, with tough situations. You're going to be thrown out of the clouds. You're going to be outcast of the tribes. But from there, that's where you have the role. You're able to find the good in everything out there, which is difficult and evil and a struggle, and bring it back into Klal Yisrael. That's your role. So it's a very important role, because that role is, you have, you know, they're given a very difficult challenge, because that challenge can mean you can also not do your job and you're totally swept away by the evil. That's a very difficult challenge. And many people of Dan were swept away by the evil. You know, Dan became a very idolatrous place, and they were expelled from the clouds. But yet their role, the initial role they were given by Hashem, was to be able to take the evil head on, because you can relate to it, and try to pull out the good from it. And I find it very interesting. The north is called Safon. Safon's north. So the word Safon is like Safun. You know, in the Seder you have Safun, is where you get the Afikoman, it's hidden away. Right? Safun is something that's hidden away. Something hidden. It says in this week's Parsha that Moshe was hid, Hatzpino. They hid him away. Right? They hid him away for 3 months before he was sent off into the river. So why is the north called Safun? If north associates with evil, because what evil is, it's just hidden good. Now, good, what we say is good is apparent good. It's things you can see. It's the good which is, you can see the good. It's right there. It's clear in front of you. Things which are in the Tzafon, you know, in the world of evil, in the world of darkness, it's also good. Hashem made it. It's also good. But it means that the good is Tzafon. The good is hidden. You have to be able to reveal it. It's concealed good. So that the struggle with being associating with struggles, the problem with struggles is that we don't see the good in them. That's our problem. Because the good is Tzafon. But if you're able to pull out the good, then you're in good shape, because then you've done your job. Hashem put you in the situation to find something good and to pull it out and to thrive from it. That's what Hashem told us. So that's the concept of Shevet Dan. It's very interesting also. Dan is called the Ma'asev Chlamachanos. Right? It says in Parshas Bamidbar, I think. Bamidbar. Maybe not so. But it says in the book of Midbar, the Ma'asev Chlamachanos. What does that mean? So Rashi describes that they were the last of the tribes to travel, which means if anybody who was walking left something behind, they'd pick it up along the way. So all the lost objects that were dropped, as the Jews traveled through the desert, Shevet Dan would pick up and put into a basket and return to their... So they would do the job of a Shabbos Aveda. They return to their owners. So it's a cute description. But on a deeper level, Dan is the tribe that's supposed to find the items of Jews, the Jewish souls, the Jewish items, that couldn't find their place amongst all the other tribes, and their job is to kind of pull them back in again. You know, you can call it Kiruv, you can call it all sorts of things. But their job was to pick up all the lost objects, everything that just couldn't find its place. And they would take it and they would bring it back in. Now in Eretz Yisrael, throughout Navi, Eretz Yisrael is always described. If you want to talk about the entire expanse of Eretz Yisrael, they always say, Midan v'ad Beersheva. That's like the phrase always used, from Dan till Beersheva. So Beersheva was the furthest south, then Dan was the furthest north. So Dan was at the border. They bordered the evil. They bordered all the non-Jewish countries. They bordered all their enemies. And their job was to be at the border and be able to serve as that link to show that we can take these enemies on and pull out the good from these enemies. That was their job. And the hero of Dan, like we said, the hero of Dan was Shimshon, Sefer Shoftim. You know, every single tribe had their hero in Tanakh somewhere. So the most famous member of Dan was Shimshon. Shimshon's also very troubling. You read the story of Shimshon, it's a very troubling story. Shimshon's somebody, when he's born, his birth is announced by a malach. He's a nazir from the womb. He's somebody that when he's born, it says, it says the spirit of Hashem began to beat in the camp of Dan when Shimshon was born. So Shimshon brought an element of Hashem into the world. That was Shimshon. But yet, we see Shimshon, he goes out and seems to marry non-Jewish women, and his downfall was based on a relationship he had with Delilah. And you figure out, like, how could this person be such a holy man when he's marrying Philistine women and having this, what seems to be like sort of affairs? Like, it's a very strange story. But he's from Shevet Dan, which means that his job was to associate with these people and pull out the good. So the Rambam says that certainly don't think that these women didn't convert. They certainly converted. That's what the Rambam says. There's no way that you could think that Shimshon, who's considered, he's somebody, again, that he's a nazir from birth, and he had the Ruach Hashem within him, and he's one of the, he's compared, Yaakov thought he could be Mashiach, Shimshon. He was the one that Yaakov thought was Mashiach, was Shimshon. So don't ever think, the Rambam says, that he didn't convert these women. They converted the women. What he did was still not appropriate at the end of the day, but they converted. But what was the idea of Shimshon? So it says in the Navi, it says that when Shimshon went out to marry these women, it says his parents didn't know, Meshem hiki toana hu mevakesh, that essentially the whole plan was from Hashem, that Shimshon took on the Plishtim alone, he married these women who came from Plishtim descent, and his job was to be able to associate with the Plishtim, but yet bring out all the good from the Plishtim. That was his job. He really fits the description of his tribe. And Yaakov thought that Shimshon was Mashiach. When Yaakov had his prophecy of the future, he saw Shimshon fighting the Plishtim, he saw Shimshon inspiring Jews. He said, this guy's Mashiach. This guy's the one who's going to save all of Klal Yisrael. Until he saw him die. When he died, he said, okay, he can't be the Mashiach anymore. But Shimshon was on a level because, you know, essentially, you know, Shimshon's compared to the sun. Shimshon, the Shemesh. Shimshon is Shemesh, right? Compared to the sun. Which Chazal say that Shimshon had strength like Hashem in some way. That's how strong he was. That's how mighty he was. Just to note, we also mentioned last week what Esav was compared to the sun, you know, which Esav and Dan associate too. But Shimshon is a paradigm of Dan, because Shimshon is somebody who was totally drawn and associated with the world of evil. But he understood that it's Me'ashemhi, that everything that I'm doing with this world of the Philistines was from Hashem. And the whole purpose was to be able to make a tikkun, to be able to perfect it and bring out the good from this world. That's what Shimshon knew. So he went outside the camp. He left the Jews, went by himself into Plishtim. He fought against them single-handedly. He killed the enemies, and he was able to try to draw out the good from the women that were there. And he did it for the sake of Hashem. He was interacting with the evil to bring out the good. That's what he was doing. And that's really Mashiach's job. The reason Yaakov is Mashiach was because Mashiach's job is not to be this just perfect specimen sitting there in the ivory tower teaching Torah. Mashiach's job is to be able to go out to the whole world and pull out the good from the world, to find all those Jews that don't know about the Torah, to be able to teach those nations that don't know about Hashem, and be able to inspire them for the good. He has to be able to associate with all sorts of people. There's a reason that the Mashiach we know descends from David HaMelech, the way that we have it. And Mashiach comes from all these different questionable relationships. Tamar and Yehuda, Lot and his daughters, David and Bathsheba, all these things, all these relationships will seem questionable. And the idea is because Mashiach associates, he knows about sin. He's familiar with sin. He comes from sin. He associates with things which are not necessarily the purest acts. But that means he can relate. And he knows how to deal with it. That's what it means. He has it in his blood to be able to relate to people who are involved in these types of things. He himself can understand what they're all about. And through that, he's able to bring out the good from within. So Yaakov thought that Shimshon was Mashiach for that purpose. So if we take all these concepts together, you have a fascinating idea. That, you know, Dan is the Shevet of month of Teves. Teves is the month that we said where evil really begins. Teves is when Esav's power begins. Teves is when the destruction of Ismiklis begins. Teves is when Gullus begins. The Nach, that Esav's compared to a snake, and Dan's compared to a snake. Esav's somebody who has within him the Midas Hadin, the attribute of strict judgment, and Dan has this as well. The idea of a snake, you know, the way we view snake in life sometimes, you know, snake's always kind of like hiding off in the brush somewhere, and you're always worried you're going to walk by and step near it, and it's going to like jump out, lunge, and bite you. That's how we view a snake. Because snakes, like the same way we're saying that Don kind of infiltrates the world of evil and pulls out the good, the snake we view is infiltrating our world and injecting evil into us. You know, the snake has its venom and injects the evil. But Don is there's a good snake. You know, Don's a snake that's able to infiltrate the world of evil and inject it with good. That's Don's job. He jumps out of the camp. You know, he's outside the clouds. He's outside the camp. He jumps out. He jumps into the other world. He bites them in a good way, injects good into the world. So it's kind of like the equal and opposite type of snake. That's who Don is. So the way that we are able to perfect and to rectify the evil of the world is to infiltrate, to understand the evil which is there, and kind of bring it down from within and bring out the good which is there. The angel of Esav that wrestled with Yaakov. So if you look at the story, it's interesting. So Yaakov wrestles with his angel. At the end, Yaakov seems to win, I guess. It's hard to see who actually wins the fight, but Yaakov wins at the end. And then at that point... Thank you. At that point, once Yaakov wins, he says that, I want you to admit to my taking the brachos from Esav. That's what he needs him to admit. Now, Yaakov might, you would think, wants to just kind of destroy Esav. He doesn't want Esav to confess. He wants Esav to be gone. But he tells the angel, no, I want you to admit to the brachos. Because that's the idea. The idea is that Yaakov, with the satan, makes a struggle. Yaakov says, I don't want you to be destroyed. I want you to admit to who I am. I want to be able to see the good within. I want you to admit to the good. And to bring out the good from the evil. So Don goes outside the camp. But from there, from outside the camp, they're able to find the good. And so if we want to know what's our job in this month, when you're in a month where the month seems to be totally shrouded in tragedy, and it's a month of struggles, and it's a month reflective on anti-Semitism, and on Golus, and on Horban, and all these terrible things, and on Esav, and idolatry, and everything we discussed, so what's our job? So I think that the big lesson for us is the following. You know, we are people that we live in a time of Golus, a time of Mevis HaMikdash, time of destruction. That's where we are right now in history. So we're essentially like Don. We're outside the camp. We're not in the camp together. We're all outside the camp. Maybe together, we're outside the camp. So we interact with forces which are not always positive forces for a Jew. We interact with a culture around us that might at times be, you know, anti that which we stand for. We have to struggle within ourselves with certain midos or challenges that we have. And our job, I think, is to two things. So number one, for our job would be that from the interactions, we have to strengthen our connection to the good. We have to understand, okay, I'm interacting with something which I find to be bad, and now I can have a stronger connection to the good, because sometimes you have to be able to draw the lines and make the contrast. So I can say that this person I find to be a terrible person, and this is why, and therefore I'm going to go in a much stronger way to the side of the good. I find this mita to be a very bad mita, and therefore I'm going to try so hard to go the other direction. Interacting with evil, number one, makes you define the good much more. But number two, you know, our job is to be able to draw in the good from society which is there. Don was Ma'asav Chol Machanos. He's able to take all those lost pieces of the Jewish people and kind of bring them back in again. They were supposed to go into Golos to find all those lost Jewish souls and bring them back. So what does that mean? Now we find that there's ideas, there's people, there's souls. You know, in Kabbalah they're called these Nitzotz HaKadusha. There's these sparks of goodness which are out there. And the sparks of goodness are scattered throughout the world. And it's really interesting, if you look through Jewish history, and you look at every single exile we were in. So we went through a lot of difficult times. But every exile had that which we grew from it, things that we gained from it. Like, for instance, just now on one level, you can read the svarim that are written in every step of exile, and they've contributed to the Jewish people in incredible ways. We have svarim written in Spain, you know, during the heights of the Inquisition. You have svarim that are written... Now, during the Crusades, you have svarim that are written during the Holocaust. You have svarim, and these are different elements of Torah, which basically they had, we'll call them, uncovered in these countries. Being in situations drove people to think in different ways and to interpret the Torah in ways which we hadn't interpreted before, and to bring out more and more understanding of Torah. You have certain mitos that we gain. You know, a lot of people, when you look around America, and... we say, you know, certain American values may not fit Jewish values. But there's some very positive values in America which Jews have picked up along the way. And not everything is bad. And our job being in America is to figure out, okay, what is an American value which is good for us, and we're supposed to bring it in. And what's not good for us, and we should bring it in. But if we weren't in America, we wouldn't ever be exposed to American values. And some American values are good values. And there's a reason that Jews, who, you know, as we've traveled throughout Golos, what, you know, the Jews essentially went from Eretz Yisrael, we were in Babylonia, we were in, you know, Western Europe and Eastern Europe, and some Jews are in the Middle Eastern countries, and now we have most Jews are in America or Eretz Yisrael, where you find most Jews these days. But every single country we're in, there's something the country has to offer us. And it's a lot of hard work and struggle to figure out, okay, how do I overcome the difficulties of this country and find the good? But our job is to find the good which is there. That's this idea of gathering up these holy sparks, these tzotzos hakadoshim, which are out there. It's because there is something good out there every single step of the way. People grew from their struggles. There's mitos which we developed. There's ideas which were clarified. You know, I always find it interesting as well that there's certain passages in the Torah that you find fit certain times in history very, very well. So until that time came around, like, no one knew what it was referring to. But once they experienced it, it's like, oh, that's what it means. You know, because that time in history brought out a certain element of understanding the Torah. And it's only because we were put into these situations that we were able to pull out this good. So that's our job. That's the job of Yaakovim, that's the job of Sheva Dan. And like Shimshon said, that we have to realize that all these difficulties are simply, they are ways of Hashem in order to destroy the evil and pull out the good. That's what Shimshon said. Why is he going to play with all these plishti women? Because, and again, he was someone at a very high level. We would never want to say these things. But he says, because this is all planned from Hashem in order for me to pull out the good. That's what Shimshon says. That's what it was. So that's Sheva Dan. So Sheva Dan, we go back for a minute, and we can understand that Sheva Dan, on the one hand, was the most, one of the most, or even the most important of the tribes, because they had the ability to take everything in the world that was evil and pull the good out of it. That was their ability. They headed a whole camp. There was Machane Dan. They were given the bracha of from Yaakovinu that they are Achad Shiftei Yisrael. They're compared to Yehuda. They worked to build the Mishkan. They worked to build the Mikdash. And they almost produced a Mashiach. That's how great they were. But the problem is that they had such difficulties, they couldn't really withstand their battle, and therefore they became very idolatrous, and they were expelled from the clouds. But that was because they had this special mission. And I don't know, I guess we could say they failed at the time in their mission. You know, Shimshon succeeded to some degree. Maybe they failed their mission because they had such struggles. Because when you have the struggles, it's so hard to be able to pull out of the struggle and pull out the good. That's who they were. So Don was, and they were, and Hashem deemed them that way. Hashem said, your job is to be in the north, your job will be to associate with Tevis, your job is to be having tendencies within for idolatry, but that's all so you can fulfill your mission. And really, every single Sheva, their location around, can tell you much about their job. So being in the north says a lot about their job. That's what it says. So I think that's the idea of Don and Tevis. Don tells you, this is the job of Tevis. The job of Tevis is time to reflect upon destruction and evil. At times reflect upon struggles and challenges, darkness and cold, as we discussed in prior weeks. But Don tells you that, but there's a whole Shevet that's dedicated to looking at all these struggles and finding the good within them. And that's our job right now, is whenever we go through a struggle in life, the question to ask ourselves always is, well, what's the good that comes from this? How can I pull good out of this? You interact with somebody who really upsets you. So we can walk away angry and upset and, you know, frustrated. Or you can say, well, Hashem gave me this challenge. What should I take from it? What can I gain from that person? What came from the situation? Somebody goes through a very difficult time in life, God forbid. They say, what do I gain from this time of life? Why does Hashem have me go through this? And what's the positive which comes out of it? Because there's positive in everything. And that's our job, is to find it. Any questions?